Hello and welcome to CigarCast, your weekly one-stop shop for all things cigar-related, including industry news, reviews, and everything in between. We're recording live from Crown Cigars and Ales here in beautiful Brentwood, Tennessee. I'm one of your hosts, Trey Dibben. I'm joined by an inquisitive-faced Mr. Shane Reeves.
I just licked the microphone and it tasted nothing like I thought it would.
This is going to be one of those kind of shows, huh?
I guess.
No, we got you off the windows. Now you're licking microphones.
Well, I was just, for some reason, my tongue has just decided to do its own thing. I think it's because.
You are part Labrador today.
Well, I think it's because I got here and you handed me this cigar that I've been looking forward to smoking for now 3 weeks. And I was supposed to smoke it last week.
You're already salivating.
And then. We're sitting here doing show prep, and it's taking much longer than it usually does, so it's only getting worse as I go forth. And also, I think that's just my tongue's, like, reaching for the cigar. And let me tell you, the microphone tastes nothing like you think it would.
It doesn't taste metallic?
No, not really.
It probably tastes like 3 years of cigar smoke.
it tastes like 3 years of cigar smoke has been blown straight into it. It's not pleasant. And I'm a fan of cigar smoke, but I can tell you that's not pleasant.
You know, it is funny. There are few things in life as enjoyable as the aroma of a cigar. There's very few things in life worse than the stale ashtray smell.
Old cigar.
Oh, it's the worst.
We were in here one night, and someone gave my wife a cigar, and she smoked a little bit of it and did not like it. And so she put it out and said, I'm just going to stick this in your humidor. My little travel humidor, yeah. So you can finish it later. I burned it. I threw away the travel humidor. Yeah. I burned it. There was no way to get that stench out of that travel humidor. I told her, I said, never do that again.
So my travel box has no foam in it. It has no, it's plastic and rubber. Mm-hmm. It even has a little bit of that smell. And I've never put an old cigar, just by virtue of being around it. So I could only imagine if you went so far as to actually put an unlit half-smoked cigar in it.
All right. So tell us about the cigar before I lick the microphone again.
All right. So, yeah, this is a cigar. And I've got to say, I had one of these. I bought three. One of them was earmarked for you. I smoked one right away, and then I saved the other one. So we're both smoking the same cigar tonight, which is a CigarCast rarity. This is the McAuliffe Cigars A. It is named A not because of the size, because it's not. It's sort of a little bit of a fat Churchill or an extra long Toro. But it is a really interesting idea in the creation of a cigar blend. So McAuliffe, I think, better than anybody else, really stays in contact with their fans. And they created the ambassador program about a year and a half ago, or 2 years ago now, that Shane and I are both members of. And what they did about a year ago, or about 9 months ago, they released a couple of secret blends. And they, you know, made them available to their ambassadors. And they said, vote on A, vote on B. And whichever one got the most likes became this cigar. They haven't released any information on blend that I've been able to. If I'd have thought about it, I probably could have called Andy before we got started and found out some information, at least as much as they were willing to tell us. But it is a phenomenal cigar. They only release them in bundles, no boxes, but they retail at like $7.
So I'm going to draw the analogy of the night here. I hate to go early with it, but I'm going to draw the analogy of the night. Drew Estate used to have the most cult-like cigar following.
Mm-hmm.
It was very cult-like. It was, I mean, in a cool way.
Yeah.
In the same way as you would use the term cult classic, is how I'm not using.
It was a cult following in the pop culture sense.
Right. I'm not using the term cult as in, you know, we all, you know.
Not David Koresh.
Yeah, we didn't wash Jonathan Drew's feet or anything. But.
Although I'm sure some people have tried.
I'm sure some would try, but. But when Drew Estate sold to Swisher, there was some inevitable changes that came about and all that are totally unavoidable. It's just the nature of that. And I think McAuliffe, using this ambassadors program, especially if you're on the ambassadors page and you're following some of that, also the fact that you can't just get McAuliffe anywhere.
Right.
That you kind of got to seek it out. They're
still a small boutique.
Right. You still got to kind of look for it, that Al himself comes out and does some events. Things like that are kind of contributing to a more cult following. They're taking some of Drew Estate's cultists.
Yeah. And I think what's also, you know, I mean, in the Facebook group, half of the people are posting pictures of how much they love whatever they're smoking at the moment. And the other half are asking where to get cigars because my local B&M doesn't carry it. And so it's just great to see. I always wonder how people find cigars like that, but then don't have the ability to get more.
Right. How do you find a group for McAuliffe cigars and then not have,
and
the,
not
ability
have the ability
to get them?
But I, you know, if it means good things for McAuliffe, then I'm all about it, because I've always liked the Bold line, the Nicaragua, the Matafina, the Sumatra in particular. And, you know, recently a couple of shops have been doing some small promotions, and so I got to smoke the Migdalia, which I loved, the Orencia, which was phenomenal, and now the A. So I am branching out into some of their more, I don't want to say higher end stuff, but
they're legendary line. That's what different it's line.
Yeah, and man, I'm just liking everything I'm smoking from them right now.
They're doing well. They really are. They make a good cigar. This A to me is very chestnutty.
Yeah.
Chestnuts is really what I think of when I light this cigar. It really has that rubbery, you know, you can almost taste that feeling of chestnuts when you smoke this cigar. It's chestnutty.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that these were taste tested in winter. I wonder if that may have influenced the selection.
It could have. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit later my summer palate.
Yeah.
And all. And it could happen. It could be that level. But so let's... Thank you again for bringing me a cigar. I'm going to smoke it and enjoy it. I'm interested to see what it does as it progresses. It's good so far. I'm hoping it gets a great.
It does. Yeah, it definitely is a cigar that benefits in the second two-thirds.
So Cigar Aficionado wrote an article near and dear to my heart.
All right.
And I'll 16 plump cigars that will inspire you to light up.
You know, there are people that hate the word moist. There are people that hate various words. I don't know why I can't think of any others. Plump is one of those cigars for me that I'm just like, is there really no other word? You know, it doesn't make me cringe. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't bother me. But it's just one of those, it's just such a, I hate that word.
You hate plump.
It just, I can never think of a scenario in which plump would be the best choice for an adjective.
Oh, yeah. When you put the hot dog on the grill and it plumps up just perfectly.
That's
and you
a
know
verb
the
at that point.
You know that, okay. When you put the hot dog on the grill and the hot dog becomes plump. Is that better, Professor? I didn't know, but becomes plump because you know that the juices have boiled and it is swelled up to the proper size. So I can, yeah. In terms of cigars, I can't see the use of the word plump. But in terms of hot dogs, I could use the word plump.
Well,
turkey,
I don't need, well,
turkey's
I don't
plump
need,
and juicy.
I don't eat hot dogs, so maybe that has something to do with it.
You don't eat hot dogs. You don't eat bologna.
No, I eat meat, not meat byproduct.
Let me tell you something. Everybody needs a little lips and other parts put into their diet.
Lips, thighs, and buttholes.
That's right. But anyway, okay, so this is plump cigars. So this is 60 ring gauge cigars. Okay, I hate the way Aficionado addresses this. It's like you said, whoever wrote this article, who wrote this article? Andrew Nagy? Love them or hate them, thick ring gauge cigars are here to stay. I'm glad this son of a gun is not marketing anything I've ever done.
I know.
And I'll just...
It's such a sub-headline cliche, but the idea is they're ranking or talking specifically about some of the best 60 ring gauge and larger cigars. In fact, it even talks about the fact that internally they categorize everything 60 and above as grande. So pretty much once you get to 60 and further than that, it all kind of in the same category. And I've got to say, I kind of agree with that.
I'm good with that. There's really no call to ever take a cigar above a 60 ring gauge.
No.
Make it longer. Okay, if you once you hit 60, you're at the limits that I can smoke without unhinging my jaw like a king cobra.
Right.
And I, like I'm trying to swallow a baby squirrel. This is it.
Something I found interesting is that 17.2% of all retailers named the 6x60 as their top seller, which making it the third most popular size in America, which I mean, it sounds about right, but I almost would have thought that would have been a little bit higher, closer to 20%. I also know that's a regional thing.
Well, also, yeah, around here, this is a big ring gauge cigar shop. This shop sells 660s.
Most of the South is.
Is it?
It's a Southern thing.
And, you know, we enjoy that. And I can say there are certain cigars that don't perform as well in 660 as do in Toro.
Right.
You know, the Diablo, Punch Diablo, absolutely 100% good in the Toro, not great in the... but...
The Room 101 Big Payback was much better in the 5x50 than it was in the 6x60.
Right. But now there are cigars that I think are better. You know, I like the Africa, the Timbo, and the 660.
See, I don't. But I will say that the DNA actually is a little bit better in the 6x60 than it is the Toro.
And is it a function that I like a smoother draw, that I like a little lighter draw, so the 660 usually...
It could be.
...is more likely to have a good draw than a 550?
The smaller the ring gauge, the more likely you are to have too tight a draw. At least that has been my experience.
So just to hit the Plump article's high points, of course, as aficionado does, the first thing they do, Cohiba Majestuoso 1966.
Right.
What's the chances anybody that has ever looked at this article is ever going to smoke that cigar? Do you do it for the 1 in 2 bazillion that this actually impacts?
You must.
Now, how are you going to correct my English now about the use of the term bazillion?
No.
Okay.
That's actually a legitimate numerical term.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to know that bazillion works.
Wait a minute. You're not even taking exception with the most egregious part of this. 94 points from Cuba, 5 7/8 by 58. I thought we were talking about 60 ring gauge cigars.
I thought it was 60 or better. And and number two is a 7 by 58. And also, Arturo Fuente Rosado Sun Grown Magnum R Vitola Super 60. That thing needs one more nickname.
It does. Although I will say, I do like the Magnum R.
You know why it's a 660? They needed the room on the band in order to be able to write down all the names that's on this thing.
It, you know, I do like the Magnum R from Fuente. It's one of the few, that and the, is it Habano Reserve? Is that Fuente? They've got one named something like that. Are the two Fuentes that I will actually smoke.
The, going down the list,
La Antigüedad Toro Gordo.
That's a good one.
And that is a really good one.
Generally.
And under $8.
Anything La Roma de Cuba is better in the big, in the 60 ring gauge. La Roma de Cuba really understands that 60 ring gauge.
That's my father, though.
Okay. Well, anything Roma de Cuba really understands the 60 ring gauge. They're not mutually exclusive.
Fair enough.
And I will say, one of the ones they got on the list here is the Surrogate Animal Cracker. So the Surrogate Animal Cracker, the first one I smoked was a Robusto, and it was all I could handle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked Austin into getting them here, so naturally he ordered the 660s, and I did not know if I could stand up to a 660 in the Animal Cracker.
But it was actually a bit milder, wasn't it?
It actually helped it to not be as strong. So I really like the Animal Cracker in the 660. It's still the strongest cigar you're going to smoke.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy it.
I do find it interesting that the Alec Bradley Project 40 made it on this list. As I recall, neither one of us really particularly cared for that cigar.
Yeah, it's kind of a good, cheap cigar, but not really nothing to knock your socks off.
Yeah. Going back to your thing about La Roma de Cuba, the Mi Amor Valentino makes the list.
Yep. Which, like I said, they know how to do big ring gauge. Some companies just seem to know how to do the big ring gauge. The Muwat, the Mauzi weighs a ton, was good 5 years ago.
Before they shortened it to Muwat, back when it was just called the Mauzi weighs a ton, phenomenal. Right around the time that they shortened the name was also right around the time that Swisher took over. Whether that's correlation or causation, I don't know. But, yeah, it's just not the same as it once was.
No. not near as good as it once was. But so that article leads us into talking about the next article, the 2020 Cigar Retailer Survey. We covered some of this last week, and now we're going to cover a little bit more.
Before we get into it, let me ask you a question. So this is surveys from 141 cigar shops. Now, does that meet the Shane Reeves acceptable level of sample size?
No, not even close. Yeah,
it doesn't to me either. I mean, that's fewer shops than in Atlanta.
If you and I wanted to do a survey of 141 cigar shops,
we wouldn't even have to cross the Mississippi.
Yeah.
Or the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, I think we could pretty much do Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, and have it.
Atlanta has more than 100 by itself.
Yeah. Maybe Florida if we really got desperate, needed to hit something there. But I just really think that the 140 is short, but we're going to act like it's not.
All right.
And I'll thank you for invalidating the next 26 minutes of this show.
Well, you're the one that brought the order. I know that that's a sticking point for you whenever we talk about these types of surveys.
I know, but I usually wait till I disagree with you about something to bring that up.
Fair enough.
I usually wait till I'm losing to whip out that little fact, factoid.
Now that turd's on the table. We just have to dance around it.
Yeah, now I must stand upon my own merits. Thank you. So the big news about this is Toros have supplanted Robustos as the best-selling size.
Now, does this say more about my memory or my expectations that I thought this happened last year?
They've always been close.
Yeah, I could have swore. Well, they're not anymore.
But they're not. That's the big difference, is they're not anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been interchangeable for a number of years. But it's never been a solid victory. But now, 51.7% Toros versus 24.1% Robusta.
That's a huge margin.
That's gigantic.
And I believe it. You know, we talk every week. It comes up almost without fail that I am a Toro guy. I have been a Toro guy for a very long time. There's a great combination of factors that have led me there. Number one is just comfort on the palate. You know, any bigger than that, and it doesn't fit my mouth well. And I just don't enjoy, like you were talking about, unhinging your jaw like a king cobra.
Right.
Smaller than that, and I don't feel like I get really great value for dollar.
Well, that was one I was coming to. Is this shift a result of the rising price of cigars?
I think it is. Because now, you know, I like the Corona because it makes for a good lunch cigar if I've got a timetable to keep, or if it's a, well, now I'm just not going to smoke if I don't have the time, and if I have the time, I'm buying the size I want, which is a Toro, because I'm going to get the most tobacco for the best price.
Well, how many times have I been in the humidor with my wife, and she said, and I said, here's this, and I'll point out the Toro, and she'll say, yeah, but this one's only a dollar more. I said, yes, this is a Gordo. You won't smoke all of it. I would rather not spend the dollar than waste.
Right.
Waste that much cigar, because I don't mind buying the cigar, but smoke the whole thing.
Right.
It's always aggravating to me when I have somebody over my house and they smoke down to about the last third and throw it out. It's like
it was just getting good.
Yeah, there's still 20 minutes worth of cigar left there, dude. Light that thing up. Maybe right. It's commentary on my conversational abilities.
Well, but I was that way, and I still to this. How often do you go out to, and you're probably this person, you go out to eat, and you see the table next to you pays their bill, they get up, and half the people at the table left half a beer in their glass.
Right.
What the heck did you pay $6 a drink for it for if you weren't going to have all of it?
But now you see, I'm also all the way around that, because when the waitress comes out the last time with the tea jug, and I've just finished, and you know we've paid the bill, and she has the tea jug in her hand, I'll put my hand over the top of my glass.
Yeah.
Because if she pours it, I feel obligated to drink it.
Right.
And at that point, I've had enough.
Yeah, so it's the same thing for me with cigars. Like, if you're going to spend the money, enjoy all it has to give, or all that you're willing to, you know, it's different. I guess it kind of depends, you know, because we had several guys at the wedding. This is after you left. Several guys from the wedding who smoked cigars, but very occasionally came out to the little smoking porch that we had developed over there. It's guys from my church, and they all smoked about half a Padron.
Oh.
And poor Austin was just going, no.
Well,
but it's also because their wives were telling them, okay, you had your fun, get back over here. So it wasn't necessarily their fault.
Well, here's the thing. If you buy the cigar and you only want to smoke two-thirds of it, you only want to smoke half of it, you only want to smoke a third of it, if you bought the cigar, that's your right.
Right.
But if I bought the cigar, I expect you to be singeing fingernails when you're finishing that sucker up.
That's fair. That's a fair point.
I can assure you, by the end of this McAuliffe, I will have poked it. I will have prodded it. It will be down.
Fingernails will be yellow.
There will be no possible way you could obtain an extra puff off of this cigar once I lay it in the ashtray. When I lay it to rest with the due honors it deserves, it will be fully smoked. But anyway, I didn't mean for that article to turn into a soliloquy on smoking all of your cigars.
No, but it's interesting to me that, and I think it does prove your point. You know, Robusto being number two, but falling to only a quarter of, I think, really tells to the fact that, like, that was the staple of the cigar industry for years. I mean, it was the double perfecto up until about the 20s. And then since then, it's been the Robusto. It was the 30s or 40s, but it's really accessible. It's not too much. It's usually the really well-priced in the line. But I find it interesting because we were talking about, you know, the cost of tobacco and the cost of cigars. You know, you've got the Grande, which is the 6x60, and then you've got the Churchill, all of which are fairly large cigars. And then it isn't until you get to the tie for number five at 1.2% do you get to Lonsdale and Petite Corona.
Right. And so let's talk about this. I'm interested. So in a world where tobacco is free, okay, let's say instead of curing malaria and all that other useless stuff, Bill Gates decided cigars were going to be free for everybody. You had to pass a certain rigorous testing process, but once you've cleared that, your cigars are free.
Right.
And all the sizes are available. All factors being equal, cost not being there, what size do you think most people would smoke?
See, I think it would still be a Toro.
I think it would be a Solomon. I think all things being equal, knowing I didn't have to pay for any cigars, that I could have as many as I wanted, whatever, knowing all factors being equal, and I'm solely judging the shape of the cigar based on the enjoyment I get out of the shape of the cigar, I think Solomon would reign supreme.
Yeah. No, I'll give you that. I guess I was thinking a little too myopically. I think, because I think actually for me, if I'm being truly honest, it would probably be the Churchill. Like a 50, a 7x50. It's still just my preference.
And there would be a lot of people that way, but I wonder how the vast majority of people would be. I think the box press would go extinct.
I think it would too. I will say this: I would hope to see more Rothschilds out there.
Yeah, probably.
I do love a Rothschild.
I like a good Rothschild. And there's days that I come in here that I'm in here a little ahead of you, or you get tied up or something, and I just go grab a Illusione Rothschild.
Yeah, but I only know of two companies that currently make a Rothschild size.
Is the tattoo's a Rothschild, ain't it?
No, they make it in a Robusto and a Petite Corona.
What's the difference in a Petite Corona and a Rothschild?
Not much. No, the Rothschild's a little bit fatter.
Okay, so a little bigger ring gauge on a Rothschild. Yeah. Okay. After the show, we're going in the humidor. We're gonna whip them out and compare the Corona and the Rothschild and see which one's bigger. But anyway, so I thought that was an interesting article. The one more quick article before we go do the cigar under eight. I do want to talk about the Diesel Esteli Puro. So Diesel's being made in current collaboration with AJ Fernandez.
So a Petite Corona is 38 to 42 ring gauge by 4.5 inches. The Rothschild is 4.5 inches by 52 ring gauge. So, yeah.
So the Rothschild is a little bigger ring gauge.
By 10 ring gauge.
I can understand that. I know. So the Diesel Esteli Puro. So Diesel has been slowly doing some good stuff.
You've been kind of a fan for a while.
Well, they've won me over. They've got, in the wrestling business, we call it getting over the hard way.
Uh-huh.
You know, when there's a guy that comes in and his personality doesn't really fit your thing, his upbringing doesn't really fit your modus operandi, but he gets over the hard way. Diesel has gotten over the hard way with me.
Well, because for the longest time, I thought they were an online exclusive brand. And so I kind of poo-pooed them for that reason. It kind of put them in the same category as Gurkha for me.
But they seem to have done a really good job getting the quality of their product up and letting the quality of their product stand on its own. So this is going to be an Esteli Puro now. We're going to talk about this in a minute. Is this the point that Diesel jumps the shark? Because they've been good at making that mid-range cigar.
Yeah.
This is a step up.
It is, but it's not a huge step. You know, they're only going up to about $9 a stick for the Robusto, $9.50 for the Toro, and then $10 for the... I mean, that's 50 cents per Vitola is a pretty decent price jump, but they're also doing it in collaboration with AJ.
Well, by jumping the shark, I mean... This is a little more pretentious a cigar, and all. If you start reading the recipe, hand selected from AJ's farms, even from the great San Latoa farm, and you know, it's really getting a little more like they're getting ready to bump the price just a little more. You know, it seems like they're trying to push past. They're out kicking their coverage.
Yeah, but I wonder how much of that is them and how much of that is Cigar Journal.
Well, don't they write it for Cigar Journal and send it to them? I can't imagine they just let Cigar Journal write what they want to.
Oh, it's a press release. Okay, yep.
Yeah. I can't imagine they just say, hey, fellas, write us up something good on this cigar.
Well, no, a lot of times they will. If it's a review, they will. I just wasn't sure if this was which category this fell into.
Well, I'm excited to try it. Don't let my poo-pooing of the ideal and my concerns for Diesel changing shape and factions... downplay how much I am looking forward to trying this cigar. They shipped September 1st. So they'll be in the stores at some point soon. And I'm looking forward to trying it. And all, because Diesel's done some good stuff and they've been really good at staying in that lane.
Yeah.
And all, and playing it too there. But all right, you want to take a quick break to do the cigar under 8?
Let's do it. And we'll be back with more after this.
Cigar Under 8. This week, I want to talk about the McAuliffe Bold Line.
There are many different iterations under the Bold Line. You've got the Maduro, the Sumatra, the Nicaragua, the Modafina, and I'm missing one. But
La Hera,
thank you. They are all phenomenal. Now, this is a little bit of a cheat, though, because they're all around $8.
Yeah, it varies, you know, check local listings, but they're all in that $8 range, and they're all worth, if you happen to have to pay $9 for it, believe me, it's worth it.
It is.
And, you know, my favorite for a long time was the Matapina, now I'm swinging back to the Nicaragua.
That one's been my favorite since the beginning.
You know, the Nicaraguan is a Connecticut broadleaf wrapper with Nicaraguan binder and fillers.
And it comes in four sizes, from 5x48 all the way up to 6x54.
Okay, you're going to have a hard time finding this cigar. It's a Nicaraguan, but the label is not orange. The label is blue. Just so everybody knows. But great cigars, full-bodied. These are definitely a cigar smoker's cigar.
Yes.
But I really enjoy this whole line of cigars. So I just thought for the Cigar Under 8 this week, we'd cover it. Just try anything in the Bold line until next week. Welcome back to the Cigar Cast. This is one of your hosts, Shane, sitting across from the man who's the founder of the Inner City Adult Co-Ed Red Rover League, Mr. Trey Didman.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That sounds about right?
That sounds about right.
And Red Rover, is it not sad that you can't play that much past, what, 5, 6? What's the cap? I bet kids don't even play Red Rover. I bet kids couldn't play Red Rover now to save their life.
You get to about 8 or 9, and you get those handful of kids that are a little too aggressive, and it ruins it for everybody.
Well, yeah, you get somebody whose tendon strength and grip strength is not the same, and they end up getting a shoulder tore out of socket.
Yeah, I think they actually outlawed Red Rover before they outlawed Dodgeball.
Well, Dodgeball had a certain level of vindictiveness and hate to it.
But it required a skill.
There's
a very limited amount of skill in running fast at somebody's forearm.
Well, but the beauty of that was you always had the deal where you ran fast and then did the last minute swerve. And also you just
so the people that weren't bracing for it.
Right. So the people that are sitting there with their eyes clamped shut and holding onto each other's hands, their knuckles are turning white, and then you hit the guy beside them and just blow them out, you know, across the road. And also, I think there's still a little skill involved in the Red Rover League.
I didn't say no skill. I just said, but that is the thing. You get, you know, when you're 8 years old or so, your bones are stronger than you are. When you get to adulthood, your bones are not as strong as the 20-pound account executive running at you at full speed.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's really no practical way that two adults could hold arms and stop a running adult.
No,
it's just not practical. So anyway, we'd have to change the rules. That's one of those things, though, that what I think happened is somebody someday said the quote, Red Rover, let, you know, whoever come over. And they said, hey, you know, we're going to make a game out of that. All right, what do we do? All right, everybody hold hands.
Whoa. It's not that kind of camp.
Well, okay. Well, that's what the director said last night.
But,
anyway. No.
But we're going to send one of these kids full speed ahead and try to, okay, yeah, that works.
So I think that's just one of those things that...
Add a little barbarism.
You had the quote, and then you built the game based on that. It's kind of like, you know, the...
It's like the emoji movie.
Yeah.
You had the title first and before you, and just kind of built the story around it.
Which ironically kind of... So quotes and cigars. Let's talk about this for a minute. There is a plethora of quotes and cigars.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a cigar guy. I know that's hard to believe, but I am. But every word uttered about cigars is not brilliant.
Is not created equal.
You know, so Cigar Aficionado did an article called Words of Wisdom. And going through here, you know, I feel sometimes that smoking is, believe it or not, more of a private affair. Something I look forward to, that I covet. I will deny myself several cigars during the day, so I can look forward to that evening cigar with greater relish.
You know, and it's funny because, and this is from Sylvester Stallone, and I really appreciate that take for someone who's actually fairly well known to be a cigar smoker. You know, he's the Mark Twain of our era when it comes to, you know, the recognition there. Not quite, he's a step below Schwarzenegger, I would say, but he's right up there. But, you know, so I've gotten back on a training plan. I've got a couple of fitness goals that I'm working towards by the end of the year. And you know, I used to have a morning cigar just about every day, or at least an early after or like a late morning cigar. And I found that because most of the time I work out around lunchtime, I'm not doing that because I want to be in my best form when I go out there and knock out my mileage. It does make that first cigar of the day that much better. When you've earned it.
It does. My morning cigar is after I've done my walking, after I've done my rowing, I've had breakfast, and now I'm ready to prepare for my day.
Mm-hmm.
And all. And I really dislike it when somebody calls me during my morning cigar. I don't mind calling them, but I don't want them to call me.
Right.
But
that's pretty much how I live my life in general anyway.
I'll call you.
Yes. Because I'm one of these guys that, like, I build my day around my own expectations of what my day is. For better or for worse, that's just the way I'm wired. And so if I'm in the middle of something and then someone calls me, you know, I'm immediately going to assume it's a nonsense call. And then you're going to have to build up the value of why are you wasting my time?
Right. You're starting out in the hole.
You're starting out in the hole.
Cigars are just a tremendous addition to the enjoyment of life. Now, very rarely can you agree with Rush Limbaugh.
But
I can definitely agree with Rush Limbaugh on that. Now, of course, the worst possible picture to go with it, he's sitting in some sort of a private jet, obviously.
Right.
No, definitely not showing the voice of the common man.
I really liked Michael Strahan's quote. You know, cigars solicit conversation. You see someone smoking a cigar and you feel instantly closer to them. And I like that. You know, there's... How many times have you been out on the golf course and cigars have been why you started talking to the foursome in front of you or behind you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and or even around here, people will walk up to you when you're, you know, we'll be having a conversation about something and somebody will just walk by and hear it and come, hey, I don't interrupt, but I think this, which I love.
Yeah.
I never want to stop that. I never want to see that not happening and all. But Now, here's the thing. Some guys work on it harder than others and all, but what's the dumbest cigar quote you've ever been assaulted with? And it's usually from somebody who smokes one cigar every 16 years. But really wants to get, you know, they found out you're a cigar guy. They know you've got the podcast and they want to hit you with some great cigar quote because they assume that'll instantly elevate you into purchasing the vehicle's extended warranty or whatever they're trying to sell at that moment. What's the worst?
I guess, usually anything Cuba related. Because I had a couple, you know, it's really, because people strive so hard to prove, you know, one of my favorite quotes is actually from a friend of ours. He says, show me a guy who calls himself an aficionado and I'll show you a D-bag. And I feel like that doesn't exactly answer your question.
But it's not even close, no, but go ahead.
No, but it's describing a type of cigar smoker, the guy that has to talk exclusively in quotes or talk about, you know, we talk about cigars a lot because it's something that both interests us, but it's not the only thing we ever talk about. And you find that in social settings, not at the cigar shop, where someone finds out your cigar smoker and all they can talk to you about is cigars at that point.
Well, the most recent cigar quote that has come out that I hate it, I see it on T-shirts, I see it on hats, I see it on walls, I see it all kinds of places. And it's so aggravating to me when I see somebody that says, that's what I do. I smoke cigars and I know things.
Oh, I hate that.
I hate that because it's a ripoff of a Game of Thrones line about drinking.
Right.
And all. And it,
it's as pretentious as it gets.
Oh, it's the most obnoxious cigar quote. If you have a shirt with that on, burn it now. Trust me, you're better off. Take it off.
Although it does replace the one you just reminded me of when you were doing your build-up, which was the old slogan from the Punch cigar posters, which is, I use my cigar smoke as idiot repellent.
Yeah, I hate that too. And there's just, it's, to me, okay, folks, a cigar, sorry, my microphone just fell down. A cigar is a gentleman's pursuit. Conduct yourself as one when you're holding a cigar. Is that too much to ask?
I don't feel like it is. And we've talked about that. Obviously, there are exceptions to that rule. But, yeah, I think, especially for me, you know, when the conversation steers towards cigars and that type of thing where there's an antagonistic view, I often try and see myself from the viewpoint of representative of all cigar smokers at that point. You know, as an industry, as a hobby, as a fraternity, we are under attack right now. And I don't ever, it's the same reason that I stop at stop signs when I'm riding my bike, even if it's clear and I can't see another car for a mile in every direction, because I don't ever want to be the car, or I don't ever want to be the guy that reinforces the negative stereotype. And so I don't ever want to come, you know, so yeah, to preserve the hobby for everybody else, I owe it to them and to myself to conduct myself accordingly.
Oh, the other one. Yeah, I'm pretty busy. I'm holding a cigar.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
Oh, I hate that guy. I hate that,
you
that
should
shirt
not,
and that show.
By definition, you should not be busy if you're holding
a
cigar.
If you're holding a cigar and you think that makes you busy, you're doing it wrong.
Exactly.
And of course, we were discussing this briefly before the show.
I was wondering if you were going to get back to this.
I hate the Sigmund Freud quote.
Sigmund Freud.
Him. I hate that quote, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Why do you hate that so much?
Because when I'm having a cigar, I want to be involved in the cigar. I don't want to dismiss my cigar as just... And I know the meaning is bigger than that.
Yeah.
But none of my life is lived at face value.
No, I know that. But the reason I don't hate that quote, I mean, it is one of those quotes that, like... Oh, you're a cigar smoker. Sometimes cigars just cigar. Like, I do hate that. But in the context in which that quote was originally stated, you know, Sigmund Freud was renowned. He's a father of modern psychology and renowned for his dream interpretation and dream theory. And basically, anything that was somewhat phallically shaped was meant to be representative of your penis envy or your whatever it was, right. And then anything that what like a cavern or a cave was meant to represent the alternative. And
right.
So the idea was that everything in when you're talking to Sigmund Freud, everything was symbolic. Everything was heavy sexual symbolism. And so his saying that was basically that not everything has to be examined under the microscope. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Okay, we're going to come back to this topic in just a second, but I got to stop. I'm going to acquire a stick of dynamite and a Wile E. Coyote style plunger, and I'm going to put it into that speaker that sits on top of that humidor over there.
Is it going off right now?
It is.
Oh.
And he always plays music on it at the worst possible time.
I thought we had gotten away from that.
Somebody else does. I've turned it off. I've threatened to throw it out in the road. The only thing that's gonna suit me, apparently, is I'm going to have to put a stick of dynamite in the back of that speaker and blow it up right here in the middle of the cigar shop.
That's funny. I cannot hear it at all. I don't even notice it.
Some piano music, something like that. But anyway, I've voiced my opinion upon this a million times. So you can't hear it now?
No.
Oh, okay. But anyway, back
sometimes
to cigar.
Sometimes it's nice to be deaf.
In this instance especially. But, you know, there are some good cigar quotes, but I don't know that we necessarily need quotes about cigars.
No, I don't think so. Well, one of my least favorite things in the world is the quote that intends to be a quote. You know, the buzzwords, the quippy lines that are always intended. You know, the best quotes are the ones that were never intended to be lasting quotes. And so... So, yeah, when it comes to quotes about cigars, if they were natural in their original context and if they're particularly poignant, great. But to strive to come up with something just so that it gets repeated, regardless of what the topic is, but especially with cigars, I agree with you. That's not how it's supposed to work.
You don't want a manufactured quote.
No.
You know, I'm looking for it now, the Zeno Davidoff quote. And all there's a smoke less but better. Turn this process into philosophy. That's manufactured.
Yeah, and all that's written by a PR department.
Yeah, it should really come naturally and should flow easily, or not at all. And it should have a ring of truth to it. But anyway, okay, I've complained enough.
I will say I just caught this one at the bottom. I didn't see it when I read through the first time. If I'd have taken my doctor's advice and quit smoking when he advised me to, I wouldn't have lived to go to his funeral. George Burns.
Okay, George Burns gets a pass for
exactly,
me.
Exactly.
George Burns is kind of forever going to get a pass for me. George Burns, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, they kind of get a pass for me. I'll put the stamp of approval on whatever they got going on. And I'll definitely give them a pass.
Yeah.
And all because they contributed more than they've taken from life as a whole. But okay. So, speaking of which, next time somebody sends you a bad cigar quote, are you going to talk about your poison pen letter that we didn't get to last week?
Yeah, so this is... Yeah. I had an experience recently, a couple weeks ago now, and I want to bring back the art of the poison pen letter. There used to be a time in the not-too-distant past where if something got under your skin to the point that you could not hold it in, that you would craft a harshly, strongly, but well-thought-out worded letter. And you would mail it to the CEO of Boeing or whoever was in your crosshairs that day. And they were taken seriously. You know, now I'm going to write a strongly worded letter is a punchline. But there was a time when that was actually meaningful and impactful. And especially if you read through some of the letters from the founding fathers and going back even, you know, the quips and the barbs were so poignant and it required editing and it required a real conscious thought. The internet has made it way too easy to just spout off, "No, you,"
right,
and that be the end of it. And I really wish we would go back to a point where, you know, AI in technology has gotten so good, it would be really easy to write a program that says, "This looks like you're dissing somebody. It must be a clippy pops up, right? It looks like you're trying to show displeasure with somebody. This must have a minimum character count of 500.
Right.
And you have to hit send on four different iterations.
Right. I'm good with that. And then at the end, it can be, you know, right before you hit the last send, you can hit the delete key.
Well, so that's the other piece of this, because we also need to reestablish that this was always, you know, this also, speaking of psychology, is one of those things that you're taught from a young age of when you, again, trying to understand and learn how to deal with emotions and keep them from coming out in a bad way, is write a letter, put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, address it, and then burn it.
Right.
And just get rid of it. Get that off of your chest. But again, I'm blaming social media and the internet. It's too easy to just hit send.
Oh, yeah. It's too easy to hit send and never be able to take it back.
Right.
The power of the written word has been lost and all. And there's a lot to handwriting and having a written word too there. You know, have you ever written your wife a love letter?
I have.
And I'll, you know, and everyone out there do the quiz along with me. Have you ever written to your father and or mother to thank them for all they've done for you in your life?
I have.
And I'll, have you ever written to someone who you care deeply about that offended you or hurt you in an effort to make repercussions?
In a non-aggressive way? More like an atonement kind of thing?
Yeah, just in the... I don't know. It's kind of interesting because there's a couple ways you can go about that. You know, I'm writing you this letter because you said this and it really bothered me, and I need clarification to find out if this is what you were trying to say.
I have not done that with the written word, but I have done that digitally. But that does kind of go back to my original point about taking the time and the care to edit, you know, because I think that's really where my where it comes from for me is not just firing off a missive full of emotion and then just hitting send. It's taking the time to calm down, to examine, to approach from multiple angles, to edit.
I can understand that. But I can understand that it does seem like social media makes it too easy to just run through that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I like that. We talk in my house a lot about how words have meaning. You know, it was like earlier in the show, you know, I said using plump as an adjective, specific, you know, that was a very specific thing. You know, I wasn't really getting onto you for changing the meaning of the word, but or the usage of the word. But the point that we make in my house is to choose your words carefully. And it's because, especially when you're dealing with people who maybe don't hear well, or don't understand, you know, whether English isn't their first language, whether they are, you know, with any number of reasons, you know, you're talking from across the room and things get lost in translation. Choose your words so carefully that the meaning is not up for debate.
Well, and also know your audience.
Yeah.
Okay, here's, I'm going to give everybody a
simple... Oh, I'm terrible at this.
I'm going to give everybody a simple rule. Assume that everybody in your audience on Facebook are jerks. Okay, just assume it and be okay with whatever you post, whatever comes back, you're just going to let it slide like water off a duck's back.
Right.
And don't assume.
Or if you can't, don't engage.
Right. If you can't make, if you are not okay assuming that you would go tell this statement to a crowded auditorium full of jerks and not care what they said or hurled back at you, don't make it.
Yeah.
Just save yourself the effort. Okay, let's talk about the A. I want to break it down and really talk about this A for a few minutes. I'm intentionally stopping the topics a little early because I feel like I need to give this
okay.
A. I'm not this guy. I'm rarely the guy that describes cigars in these terms. But this started with chestnut. It has a lot of oaky, dry leaves, kind of tastes like, you can definitely tell it was blended in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a winter cigar. It has that dry flavor and all. It's Nicaraguan, not a doubt in my mind. This is not Dominican in any way, form, and or fashion. Maybe a touch of San Andreas in there.
See, I don't get San Andreas. I do get a little Honduran, though.
Could be. could be San Andreas, could be Honduran, but definitely not Dominican. This is not savory.
Right.
But it has that natural woodsy flavor. This is by far the best McAuliffe they've ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that right now up front. Of all the ones of theirs I smoked, and I've smoked a fair portion of their line. I think the only one in their line that I haven't smoked is the one that comes in the coffin, the Gomez Sanchez, just because right. I hadn't wanted to pay the money for the coffin.
Right.
By far, the best McAuliffe they have made. That being said, I can still only give it about a 6.
Yeah.
It's a solid 6, though. There's not, you know... There's no factor. This cigar stands on its own as a 6. I'm not factoring in availability. I'm not factoring in price.
I was about to say, because that's about a point for every dollar you have to spend on it, too. It's a little bit. It's $7, but still.
Just an excellent cigar, but really kind of, it's the cigar I needed tonight because it really, it has a lot of complexity, a lot of flavor. This is really blended well. I think this is kind of what McAuliffe's been working to. So I think the first line, the legendary line McAuliffe come out with, was establishing this is what the Gomez Sanchez family does. This is kind of the way we do that. Then you did, they said, okay, we're getting a lot of people that want more profile in their cigar. So they came out with the bold line.
Right.
This is kind of them reeling back the bold line and reeling up the Gomez Sanchez stuff. I expected it. The expectation was that it would be more along the lines of the bold line, but it's not.
No, it is so flavorful. I would put it on body, I'd put it about a medium on strength, but it is very full flavored. You know, like you said, you're not a tasting notes guy. I am a little bit more than you are, but I'm still not, you know, of the level of somebody who calls themselves an aficionado, for example. And I'm getting so many nuanced flavors out of this.
But this is a cigar that could be tricky. You bring this in and just hand it to somebody who's a novice smoker, they're going to call it full-bodied right off the bat.
Yeah.
This cigar could sneak up on somebody that's not a regular smoker, could snag one of these and say, wait, that's a lot heavier than what I think, especially our guys around here that professed Connecticut smokers.
Well, let's say medium plus then.
I'll go
medium plus. I think that's fair.
But I call it a 6. What do you?
I'm at a 6 on this as well. I think it's just, I may give it 6.25 just because of price. But then back to 6 because of availability.
Yeah, I kind of have to take whatever advantage of price I have to discount for availability.
But this is going to come back. I mean, it's not going to be limited supply for forever.
Yeah, and it's the size that they do well. Although I wish if we're going to call it the A, we would have made it. I mean, it's our thing about naming cigar sizes.
True, but they didn't name the cigar size. The only reason I give them a pass on calling it the A is because they have done the ambassador program so much better than any other cigar company ever has, probably ever will. And this was blended really by the ambassadors, and well, so it's a way of giving, it's called the ambassador. I get it,
right? Yeah. Could we not have just called it the ambassador? This is the McAuliffe ambassador. Could we not have just called it the ambassador? We have to shorten it.
If memory serves, they actually put a poll out on the Facebook group taking ideas and suggestions for the name, and I think this one may have won popular opinion.
It's a little hip for the room.
I'll give you that. I will absolutely give you that.
But all things considered, I really have enjoyed it. I really think it's a good cigar. I think everybody should smoke one. And all, because the flavor is there, the body is there, it's full. It's definitely got everything I was looking for tonight to really sit back and enjoy in a cigar. You know, because my summer palate is kind of coming on. I'm kind of getting into a little darker stuff, a little richer stuff. I guess my summer palate's kind of leaving.
Yeah.
It would be a more apt description because I am starting to go a little darker. For 6 months there, everything I wanted was Connecticut.
Yeah. Okay, so that does, I was going to say, because I typically smoke heavier, darker in the fall and winter, and then my summer palate kind of starts in the mid-spring.
Yeah, I think this is definitely, I'm kind of coming to a darker time in my cigar smoking.
I'm noticing that myself.
And all, but how do they get a hold of us, Trey?
You can reach us via email at info@thecigarcast.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter at TheCigarCast and facebook.com/TheCigarCast.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening this week. Until next week, have a great cigar and think well of us.